All right, KISS Army, welcome to the KISS FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. We're just a bunch of KISS fans, and we talk KISS. So come along for the ride. You've got nothing to lose. Join the KISS FAQ YouTube channel. Member perks include exclusive song story demo bites, songs of the moment with contextual introductions, document and merchandise dives, KISS FAQ board topic reaction videos, early access to channel content, and hopefully lots more. Click the join button on the KISS FAQ YouTube channel or follow this link. Yeah, I did turn down the boom a little bit. Welcome to the KISS FAQ podcast. I'm your host, Julian Gill. We've got a full panel here today, which is going to be awesome for talking about off the soundboard. I want to thank these guys for putting on a great show that I was able to kick back and relax and watch while I was in England. So, Ken, great job hosting, and thank you as always.
You look pretty comfortable over there in England with your pint of beer.
I was very comfortable in England with my pint of beer. Met up with a friend who just happens to live where I was, which was in a very obscure town outside of London. Went for a pint, was introduced to a new pint. I fell in love with that pint. It was lovely, absolutely brilliant. Then we went for a curry. Next night, sister came into town, went for another curry. I went back to the pub and had a couple more of those pints and was talking beer with the barkeep, and he had me try each one.
Nice.
We went back to the original. Just sips, Mark. Not whole pints, guys. I mean,
you know. No. Easy. I wasn't implying anything. Easy. I wasn't implying that. I'm just saying that it was nice to let you
who
go
sips
through
a
them,
beer?
You know?
Yeah, usually I wouldn't usually stay in that town, but because the pub was across from the hotel and the curry house, it made sense this time to not.
That thing is so great about England. When you're over there and you can go bar hopping, you know, go between bars and, you know, eat a little bit, drink a little bit, and people are so happy and merry, and so I really miss that. I have to go back someday.
Yeah, do that in Liverpool, down Smith Down Road, or even in City Center. A lot of great pubs, a lot of great food. Mm. But we're not here to talk about England or pub food or beer. We're here to talk about KISS. We've got some news to get through first before we get started with everything else. First and foremost is episode 572 was a very impromptu meeting with John Humphrey from Seether to talk about some of the stuff that he's got going up in the backstage auctions. But we framed the conversation for that episode just around collecting and the decision to start, you know, downsizing collection. So if you're interested, check that out. Kiss My Wax has their episode up with them now as well, which is a much longer dive because they were able to schedule theirs with a little bit more time and have everyone involved. On the member side of this channel, last week went live with Setlist Transitions, which is an investigation into the changing dynamics of the 1976 setlist from Kiss Alive into Destroyer. So check that out. I recorded a new episode this morning, which will be Audio Odyssey, the first chapter in a deep dive into 1981 and The Elder. And while I was on the plane from London, I managed to edit up Kiss Comes Alive, which is the follow-up from Beacon at Midnight. So what other news? We've got Paul Stanley, a new Workday ad. Now, back in 2023, there was a Super Bowl ad with Paul Stanley, Ozzy Osbourne, Joan Jett, Billy Idol, and one other fellow, and I don't know who he was off the top of my head. But it was really entertaining, very fun. Lonnie, since it involves football, going back to 2023, do you remember Paul's Workday ad and any thoughts on this new one, which is just for a new campaign?
Yeah, I remember seeing that during the Super Bowl. I thought it was cool. It's like sitting around the office saying, "Oh, you're a rock star," you know, and Paul pops out and goes, "You're not a rock star, I'm a rock star," or something like that. And, you know, and Ozzy's in it too. It was good. So I think it's cool that we're doing something like that again. So
yep. The new one's very entertaining. Well, it's very brief, but it's we'll have to see where that goes in terms of the campaign. So always good to see KISS in popular culture wherever they crop up, because they're like cockroaches. You never know when they're going to come out from under a car. That's what I love about this band. Other news fresh today is a new book has been published, and it's another one not written by me. It is Creatures of the Screen, an uncensored and unofficial history of KISSploitation on film, television, and home video by John Harrison. It's 676 pages, weighing in at 2.45 pounds. That's just over a kilo to non-heathens. So it's been a long time coming. John is on the KISS FAQ message board and has been sharing samples from within the book. If you're into where KISS has popped up in media and that side of the KISS equation, which it's a massive facet that I've managed to ignore because I have zero interest in it, but I ordered that the moment the link was up on Amazon. It's through Bear Manor Media, so you can get copies directly through them as well. And hopefully we'll be able to get John on the show for an interview about that. So this is not a pre-order. It's available for order today. It's through a proper publisher, and it's even been proofread.
Who did the cover? Pretty cool cover, and also a good way to get around the makeup thing, you know, with, you know, with all the licenses and stuff. I think it was a cool idea for a cover.
Yeah, looks great. Very smart as well. Just you know, when you're going proper publishing, to go the safe route and not run into any trademark issues, especially with a new ownership. So John, if you're watching or listening, best of luck with your book, and again, hopefully we'll be able to have you on the show to talk about it. What else is new? Gene Simmons, a powerful and attractive man, is appearing at the Knoxville Fanboy Expo July 11th to 13th. There are fan packages now available. Bruce Kulick is now signed up for some of the Fanboy Expos, so you'll be able to get half of the Revenge lineup in one shot. I know some people are bitching about the package prices, but Gene hasn't done these. So I guess instead of touring, he can make more money signing autographs and selling bases. All right, meet us in the mailroom. Anyone bought anything this week that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I did.
Okay.
Of course.
Well, no, I told you guys. Well, two things. One thing I just bought like 30 seconds ago was that book you just showed. Well, while you're talking about it, I thought, I don't want to forget. I'll just order it, and I order it. So it's going to be here Monday, I guess, somehow. Rather,
yeah, I hope so. Again, I pulled the trigger on that. Dan, Daniel, you bought anything recently?
Wait a minute. No, I got one other thing.
He had another one. Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah. The second one was I bought the digital download of the off the soundboard, and I had a $3 savings, and so it's only it cost me like between $7 and $8 to get to download that. So. That's how I got mine. And since I didn't get the CD Japan, I thought that's too much to go get that. And then the vinyl. The vinyl I actually had in my inbox at one time, or what do you want to call it, the shopping cart. Mm-hmm. And once I saw $120 with all taxes and everything else, I said, nope, remove from cart. I'm not doing that. So
yeah,
I got the digital, and I listened to that. So.
Yep, my
body. Okay, Daniel.
That's high definition. Daniel.
Well, I didn't buy anything, but I have to give a shout out. Last week I gave a shout out to the KISS fanzine here in Sweden. I have to mention this one. I don't know if you're familiar with this one, but it's sort Sweden of a
Rock.
Hit.
Fantastic. Yeah,
Hit Parade. What's the name of that, those old
Hit
magazines?
Hit Parader.
Hit Parader, Circus magazine.
Circus, yeah.
That kind of stuff. It still exists over here. And look at that cover. Looks pretty cool. So this is a magazine that I get from time to time, and it's been running for a long time. And KISS are featured, you know, very often. And that guy Carl Linnaeus, he wrote.
I was just going to ask, did Carl write that? Because he does a lot of writing for.
He does a lot of writing, and he's a good writer as well. I enjoy his stuff all the time, and he's very knowledgeable, and he knows a lot of KISS, and he asks questions that no one else have asked. I have to give a shout out to the Sweden Rock magazine. Oh, that wasn't me.
And Carl, great work as always. All right. Anyone else with any purchases? I did buy a book this week, but it's King Alfred and the Norwegian Transfer of Power in Britain.
What?
Which, yeah,
very nice.
That's what I read for fun. All right. So off the soundboard. Make sure I'm not skipping over anything. So. Off the soundboard is going to be our topic of discussion today before we get into Bruce versus Vinny. And let's just take a look at the poll on the FAQ. I thought I'd done one on YouTube as well. And this was just pruned this morning. So 58% of people are very positive about the off the soundboard. 8% are very negative about the off the soundboard San Antonio release. So I think those are very good numbers as far as KISS fans and releases go. 16% are in the middle. Well, get out of the middle, make a decision. And as many as that also did not purchase or have not listened. So I think that's a pretty good reaction to the off the soundboard release. Let's just go around the table with, you know, initial overview of what San Antonio off the soundboard has done for you. Mark, you've not spoken yet, so let's start with you.
Which is surprising, actually, but I think my first reaction was I was sort of in the meh at first when I first heard it, but I didn't want to be in the meh area because I'm an Asylum guy, as you know, and that's my, you know, favorite non-makeup KISS record, and I really wanted to give this a fair listen to. So I listened to it multiple times on YouTube because KISS actually posted all the whole record there for you to listen to off their YouTube page. So I was like, okay, so why even bother buying it digitally? It's right there. So I listened to it on there, and I listened to it a couple of times there. And even last night, I went ahead, put the headphones on, and when I went to sleep, I listened to the whole thing, you know, while I went to sleep, just to have it embedded in my brain. And I think I'm going to put myself now in the pretty good category.
Excellent. Lonnie, what about you?
Yeah, I agree. It's pretty good. I'm not giving it an A plus, but I give it a pretty good review. I enjoyed it, and we'll get into it. My biggest complaint about it is that it's a little choppy with the solos scattered throughout. I feel like we gain a little momentum, you know, just right off the jump, and then we got a Paul Stanley solo. I'm like, okay. And then, you know, and then we have the Gene solo, we have the Eric Carr solo, we have the Bruce solo. It's like, it's my only complaint about it is like it feels choppy. It doesn't flow.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, like I don't like it flows like it should, but it's still pretty good. It's still pretty good. I still enjoy it.
Yeah. Jason, thank you for the gifted membership to whomever receives that. Ken, how about you? And your digital.
I think it's one of the better sounding, obviously, ones I've heard out of all of them so far. So from that standpoint, it's good. I do agree with Lonnie that, you know, just listening to the audio and you having all those, I kept skipping every time it got to one of the solos, except, well, Gene and Paul's, I skipped pretty much after listening to it one time, and that was enough. And so it better flowed that way. I Still Love You, that's another one that slowed down the whole thing too. The deal is, if you have a video of it, if you're at the concert, you're watching it when those solos happen, so that actually it's okay, it kind of works all right. But overall, on an audio kind of playback, it really doesn't work well. But I enjoyed it either way.
Daniel.
I think it was awesome, I have to say. And Silent the solos, probably that's a part of it. But I think, as you mentioned, Ken, it sounds great. The solos, of course, is a sign of the times. You can't get around that. I think it was good that they kept them in there because they must have felt as well that the solos, you know, goes against the tempo in the concert when you listen to it. So, but I do appreciate that they kept them. And you can easily skip them if you don't want to listen to them. Of course, we would have wanted to hear more songs instead, like the song that they played on the first night, like, what did they play? They played King of the Mountain, and Anyway You Slice It. And why don't they play a song like Who Wants to Be Lonely? That would be great to hear as well. Maybe it's hard to sing. The thing you said about I Still Love You, Ken... I've always felt that that's, you know, a song for the rockers to go and take a quick pee.
Go get a beer.
And then you can get back. Yeah, or get a beer. Whatever. So pee break. You need to have that sort of song in a set list in order for people to, you know, the tempo goes down and you can go and do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But if you listen carefully to that song, he sings the hell out of that song on this album. Mm-hmm. My only issue with that is after that song, they go straight into, I think, Under the Gun, and he's all out of breath for that one because he's been, you know, screaming his head off in I Still Love You. And then they go into, they should have had, like, you know, Bruce Kulick's guitar solo or something after I Still Love You. But all in all, I think it's a great album, and it's so cool that they finally paid homage to Eric Carr and Bruce Kulick and the era that they have looked past so many times before and for such a long time. So I think that is the greatest thing, that they actually picked a concert from that era.
Yeah, agree. And I'm all with you on the enthusiasm for it. Marco made a good observation that it goes a little fast, but yet I thought it wasn't as fast as some of the shows that I remember listening to as bootlegs from the era. It's such a great document for this tour, and I'm really happy that they left it untouched. They didn't edit out Paul's raps, as tortuous as some of those become. They didn't edit out some of the solos, which they easily could have done. They left it intact as a document of that tour. I agree with Super Zapper's comments that, yeah, you know, enough Asylum material isn't represented, but I'm really thrilled to have really great sounding versions of Tears Are Falling and All Night from
it
that
fits like
lineup.
A glove.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So again, the positives, you know, any nitpicking about mix and all that, you can't adjust the mix after the fact. I don't think they had multi-tracks for this. So what you have is what you get. And you can do a little bit with EQ, but for the most part, you're not going to be able to change how it was mixed at the board that night it was performed. So they could have copped out very easily and done a Crazy Nights or a Hot in the Shade or even an Animal Eyes show. They went with Asylum. And as a guy who became a fan of Kiss during Asylum, I'm grateful for that. And I was in England when this came out, so I was scrambling to VPN and all that crap to be able to download it from Australia and check it out. And it really met my expectations and in some ways exceeded them. It was fun. And that's I'll just take that. All right, let's go into some of the metrics around it. You know, Lonnie, Asylum, what does that mean to you for history, your personal history, and the cheese factor of looking back at that tour and listening to the cheese factor? Because there's audio cheese, isn't there, in the raps?
There is definitely audio cheese, you know, and I was waiting for it as I was listening to it. I'm like, oh, there'll be some good audio cheese when we're getting ready to introduce Love Gun. The Love Gun raps in the 80s are very unique and very cheesy, very 80s.
Yeah.
So I was waiting to see which one he would, you know, there's...
Well,
you know,
wasn't the nurse this time around. There's some variety in there.
It was a school yeah, teacher look instead.
It was a colleague of mine.
He always has, right? I was waiting for that, and I knew it would be the kind of shtick that it was. So, and it's very, but it's very 80s, though. It's very time-stamped in that matter for... You know, and that's fine. It doesn't bother me. Maybe it bothers some people, but the
protesters outside the stadium, they didn't. Well, yeah. They wouldn't like that one. Well, they referenced that a lot. You know, the protest. But yeah. Yes, this is in the middle of that stuff.
Multiple times he talked about that. Yeah. What I thought was more, just, you know, like awkward than that was. After Eric Carr's drum solo, Gene goes, "Eric Carr on the drums."
Erich.
It's very, very strange. So, but it was good though. As far as my personal, I'm the youngest one on the panel.
You're just a kid.
Yeah, right. So I don't have a whole lot of
just
connection.
Yeah, that's a good one.
just a boy at 45, but I don't have a whole lot of personal connection to Asylum, and the fact that I remember when the album came out, I remember the tour, and that, I mean, I was 5-6 years old, so Asylum is an album that I had to go back and get and go back and listen to when I was in high school. So, but I enjoy the album and the tour is good. It represents the album and the times very well. But there's some awkward moments in it, but it's still fun.
Yeah, you nail it for me. Just the cheese factor. It takes me back to when I was 14. So I've got no problems with it whatsoever because I was buying the magazines and seeing how Paul was talking in the magazines, you know, and how they looked. And, you know, let's put it this way. The concert matches their visual look at the time. It's as outrageous and flamboyant as the Asylum costumes were. Mark, what about you? Cheese factor and taking you back to 1985.
Oh, there's cheese aplenty. I mean, we have a variety of cheeses on this, but, you know, that's probably part of the thing that makes it charming at this point, because you're kind of expecting that. You know, the 80s was all about, you know, over-the-top imagery and, you know, flashy guitar playing and fast guitar solos, and my guitar player is faster than your guitar player, and that kind of thing was very, you know, dominant in this time period. But, you know, I did enjoy what I heard. I mean, the speed of the performances, you know, by now we are all probably used to it because, you know, Animal Eyes was extremely fast as well. So at this point, you're probably used to that sort of thing. A few things are I found extremely interesting. And number one was their selection of using that hall reverb, because let me tell you something, that verb that you heard on them while they're talking and stuff, that ain't part of the show. When you get a soundboard, it's like, hey, Texas. And it's completely dead. Like there's nothing. Yeah. A soundboard is completely dead. There's no verb on stuff like that. That stuff was all added afterwards. Why they use such a grandiose reverb for while he talked? They could have just muted it for his talking parts and then put it back on when the music played. Then I would understand that, just to give it a bit more life and make it sound a little bit more. I don't know why they did that, but that's, you know, nitpicking, and that's sort of the engineer part of me coming out for a minute. That's minor. But another thing that I found very interesting is that in this time period, you know, they're playing rock and roll night, right? Obviously, which I don't think that's ever left the set list. But at this time in their career, it almost feels like that song, like, you know, the importance of how rock and roll night is now, like during the end when they went back to makeup, it was the big song at the end. Everybody's like, you know, preparing for it. It seems like that was shifted to Heaven's on Fire. That was the big, you know, song in the 80s. That was their big, you know, rock and roll night song. And it was interesting how that dynamic switched, because when they did Rock and Roll All Night, it was just like, you know, another song kind of almost to them at that point. And then it kind of gave all the importance to that. So I found that was interesting that happened during that time period. But overall, I thought it was okay. The solos, you know, the Bruce Kulick one was not bad. I mean, I just find that, again, that's one of those things where you probably benefit from video to see what he's doing while he plays. But I'm telling you, Gene's bass solo is something that I just never got into through the whole 80s. That whole, you know, that whole thing was just wasn't my thing. I just thought it was kind of really tacky, that whole bass thing. They should have just not did a bass solo for him, to be honest. And same with Paul. Paul's thing was pretty weak. It almost sounded like he gave up. It was like he started playing notes. I was like, I got to talk to you, Texas. It's like he just completely gave up on doing the solo, you know, and rather just talk to them. But other than that, I think...
quick question, Mark. You as a Canadian and the Americans... doesn't he alter his way of speaking when he's in Texas? It almost sounds like he's, you know, the way he talks.
Yeah, it's possible that he kind of wants to feel like one of the boys there, you
one
know,
of
when
the
he's talking
Texas
with them.
Guys, yeah.
Yeah. Southern. You know, I mean, it could happen, you know, it just crept in there. But I mean, other than that, I think that the musically it was done pretty well. You know, like I said, it was a little fast here and there. But other than that, I thought that it wasn't too bad. The performances were good. The drums you could hear really good. Eric's toms are pretty well heard on this. And the other thing that I found interesting is somebody mentioned here that they were surprised that they didn't mention Eric and this and that. But don't forget, Eric was on Poughkeepsie. It's not like this is his actual first performance, right? Off the soundboard, he was on that. So, you know, if there was any time that they should have mentioned, it was probably on there. And I don't remember if they actually did. But, you know, it's he has been on us off the soundboard. So it's not like they did some big capital crime or something.
All right, Ken.
Well, you know, the good thing is it kind of takes me back to when I went to go see them. So. And, you know, and I kind of remember he would do the same rap, Paul, from show to show. I mean, that's what Kiss does. They do the same show every night. They don't deviate from it. Maybe some minor things, but the actual, you know, talking about this or that in between songs is usually the same. He did change his kind of try to talk, you know, Texan kind of thing, though, like Daniel was saying. I find it funny is like when they introduce San Antone, you know, San Antone, not Tonio, but San Antone. I guess that's maybe how they, what they say there.
That's how they
probably
say it down there, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was interesting. But yeah, the biggest thing is it takes me back. It makes me remember of, you know, where I was at my time, in my early 20s, seeing Kiss and Wasp, you know, at the Cow Palace. And that was just I remember it was a great show, great time, where, like most Kiss concerts are. I agree about, what's it, Rock and Roll All Night, though. That was kind of a weird thing when they've done that a couple of times in their tours, where they don't put it at as the last kind of encore party kind of song. I find it kind of strange. I don't like it when they do that. I think to me, it's something wrong with doing that. I guess I'm so used to it, I guess, at the end, but because it is their rock and roll, you know, national anthem thing. So, but anyway, I like it. I thought the whole thing, you know, turned out well.
I just put that up for Poughkeepsie for reference. Only Mark St. John was referenced on that hype sticker, not Eric Carr. So I don't think it's any insult is intended to Eric. No insult is intended, but obviously the marquee value of both of those is that Mark St. John was on Poughkeepsie and Bruce Kulick is finally getting his day in the sunshine on one of these releases as well. And Eric Carr has had a whole Creatures box dedicated to his drumming. So... Mm. Daniel.
Yeah. The question was something about 80s cheese. I love 80s cheese. I completely love it. And this was the year I became a fan. So to me, this is gold. And, you know, when I look back at my... I listen to Spotify a whole lot, and you get your thing in there at the end of the year, the Wrapped thing, when you see what you listen to. And always... In the top 10, I have at least 8 songs from 1985. You know, Aha, Duran Duran, maybe a Kiss song like that. So this is, I totally love this period. And I like the raps in between songs. It's a document of the times. It's the way it was back then. And it's all about fun, you know, happiness, having a good time. Nothing like what happened when Lonnie became a teenager in the early 90s, you know, with Alice in Chains, dark and downers all the time, and we're so unhappy, and let's dress like, you know, hobos and go on stage. No, this is flamboyant, fun, colors. You say what you think, and when I was... a young boy, or maybe still, you think about girls, you think about having a drink, you think about having fun, a good time, and this concert is all about having a good time. Some of the highlights, I think, is I don't mind the tempo that people keep referring to as being too high. I like the way Detroit Rock City sounds. The only thing that suffers, I think, with the high tempo is that they can't sing at the same pace. Paul Stanley has to skip words, and it sounds a bit... That's not good, but I like the tempo. I like it, you know, a little bit faster. And a song like Cold Gin really benefits from the tempo because it's kind of lethargic on the album, but in this concert, it's great. And it's good to have a song like Fits Like a Glove on a record like this, because that should have been on Alive 3, but here we get it. It's so heavy and so cool, and I always love the ending of Fish Like a Love when they all get a solo spot, you know. Bruce starts it off and then goes over to Paul, and then Gene does a cool bass thing. That's such a great song, so it's great to have there. So I'm in love with this album.
All right, so you kind of already touched on the next two questions, Daniel.
Oh, sorry.
You know, that's fine. I mean, that's how conversations kind of work. Yeah. You know, so what are some of the standout musical performances for you on this? Pick your two top musical moments that you think everyone needs to go back and check from your point of view.
Hmm.
Am I starting?
Yeah, you are.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Come on, of course, Fits Like a Glove is a no-brainer. You know, such a great 80s song that never was represented on a live album. I would have taken it any day over Domino on a live 3.
You're just sending some fighting words.
So it's Domino is a cool song, but it's nowhere near Fits Like a Glove. The tempo, it's aggressive. It's the Gene vocals on this one is so cool. I love his vocals on Fits Like a Glove, and you have the breakdown, you know, through butter, such a classic.
So that,
yeah.
Now, well, go back to Detroit, the first concert in Detroit, 1990. That's one of the few times he does the scream through butter. That's a cool one.
Yeah.
So that's one of the highlights. And then you said, well, I can't. I think it's crazy that they play, you know, Rock and Roll All Night at another spot than at the end. I think this is a great thing about this album. They were totally a current band. They played the new stuff. Lick It Up was the final song. It was, you know, not even 2 years old. And Heavens on Fire was one of the encore songs as well, a new song. So I think this was my Kiss back in 85. They were current. The new stuff was what was cool. It wasn't like the releases they did towards the end, like Monster what's the other? Sonic Boom.
Sonic Boom.
They played the stuff, and it was like crickets when they played it. Here they feel the power of the new stuff. They use it. They play it towards the end of the set. It's so cool. They were so happening at this time. So what a great album.
I move Lonnie up next to you to deal with you if you take any more shots with Revenge. All right, Lonnie, what's your outstanding musical moments from this
Revenge
album?
Revenge is cool.
Well, I agree with Daniel in the fact that I like that they feel more like a current band in this, and they're not the legacy act that they turned into. Yeah. They're playing their new stuff. It's very heavy with the non-makeup stuff. The Lick It Up and Animalize are represented. You know, obviously there's only two songs off Asylum, you know, and they do play the classics mix in there too, with Detroit Rock City and Love Gun and Rock and Roll All Night. But they're very current, and they're very proud, I think, of who they are at this time. Or they're at least really trying to make people buy into who they are at this time, and not just, oh, we'll play one or two songs off the new album, like Sonic Boom or Monster, and then okay, back to the hits type thing. So, but so that being said, that my musical what really stands out to me is Fits Like a Glove and Tears Are Falling are two really standouts to me. Tears Are Falling sounds excellent, I thought, and it's really cool to have a crisp representation of that song.
Lonnie, what do you think about Eric Carr's drum pads in Tears Are Falling?
They're different. They're very 80s. You know, again, I think it's very it represents the time extremely well. And that's what those drum pads are. I mean, it sounds so 80s listening to it. There's no mistaking when this was recorded just by listening to their instruments and how they're playing and how fast they're playing. It really is time stamped well for the 80s. So I agree with Daniel that that Fits Like a Glove is great. I mean, Daniel said he loves 80s cheese. Well, there's not much more 80s cheese than Jane singing Fits Like a Glove. So to me, that's fun though. And I love it. I love it. But my other one is Tears Are Falling, because it's perfect representation of the song.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going next because Lonnie picked my songs as well. I love Tears Are Falling with the Simmons pads, you know, just that little bit of embellishment that it gives. I mean, come on, Alex Van Halen drums were having effect on a lot of bands because, I mean, listen to his sound, you know, in 83 particularly 83, 84, mm-hmm. and how that kind of shifted. So Eric Carr was all in for experimenting and taking in those extra sounds, and he took it to a whole different level. But I think what he's doing during Tears Are Falling really makes the sound interesting. And come on, Tears Are Falling is that MTV video that is my trigger point. You know, that is my entry, and that is my reason. That's my reason for living. But also to Daniel's point, Fits Like a Glove is so fun on this. And it's a song that does work at the breakneck speed that they're performing a lot of these songs. And coming in after Detroit Rock City with that, again, even with the cheese factor involved in some of these, I just really dug those two in particular. All right, Ken.
Yes. So I do agree also with Fits Like a Glove. For
what?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean,
I like the song.
I mean, ridiculed for 10 years for liking Fits Like a Glove.
It's one of the better. No, I mean, you know, we just give you a bad time.
You just guarantee Mark is not picking that song now.
Yeah. We just give you a bad time on that one. But yeah, enjoy that. It's probably one of the better performances I had heard of that live, so that turned out pretty darn good. I do agree with the Tears Are Falling also, because I like those, you know, those drum, the pads, yeah. The syndromes, you know, because they were using the syndromes back in, even in the late 70s, because I had my Linda Ronstadt album Simple Dreams, and that was like the first time I ever heard them, and they used them very well on that album. On a couple of songs, on a couple of her
take your word
songs.
For it.
It's a good. It's a hey. It's a, that's a really good album, Simple Dreams. So look at Linda Ronstadt. So, yeah, I was surprised that they kind of used it and brought it. You know, it was that high in the mix actually. That was very cool. I guess another one close to that, Tears Are Falling. I really like Cold Gin. I like how they.
Yeah.
I think it's a solid performance. Like, okay, Fits Like a Glove. This is the new. You know, Kiss, and then they go back to the, you know, the beginning and give you, you know, and it was just a great faster version of Cold Gin, which is good because Cold Gin normally is too darn slow, so it's a lot better that way. So yeah, I was happy with that those few songs for sure.
Just a quick awesome. One. The main thing with this album is energy. You know, the energy through this album is off the charts,
except for a couple parts.
I still love you.
I'm not taking any shots at Linda Ronstadt there. I literally have never heard that album, so I will go and listen to it and see if I recognize what Ken was talking about.
They cover, all right, Mark. She covers Stone Song, so check that out.
Oh, okay.
Really good.
I'm sold.
Couple of Dice, I believe.
Awesome. All right, Mark. Yeah. The floor is yours. What are your two picks for best songs off this album?
Well, I mean, this has nothing to do with what was already discussed. I mean, I would never have picked Fits Like a Glove regardless, because it's not like it's a bad song, but it's just that I just never thought of it as like a high point in any Kiss show, in my opinion. But
it's not a Rush song.
Yeah, well, that it definitely isn't. But nope. Thing is, well, the thing is, I think that the energy, as Daniel mentioned, is the high point of the show. It definitely, they are in full, you know, high octane levels. And I think that the songs that really stood out, one of them definitely benefited from the high energy. And the other one, I'm surprised that the high energy didn't screw it up, is the fact I love Tears Are Falling. That's one of my picks for sure. And that could have easily been, you know, sunk if it was played way too fast, which in my opinion it wasn't. I think it was still in a comfortable enough level that it made sense, and you know, melodically it still came across well. You can always tell the tempos by his guitar solos, and Bruce I think nailed that one really well on this one. Yeah, it's a little bit faster, but not too badly. The other one, and this is a song that normally under normal circumstances I wasn't really a big fan of, but live albums have a tendency, for me at least, to sometimes take a studio song and make me a fan of it after I listen to the live version of it. Sometimes the live versions are so good of them that I'm like, wow, I actually really like this, and I'm going to give the studio version a second chance. And that's Under the Gun. I was never a big fan of that song on the studio version, but live here, I thought they did a fantastic job. Sure, it's really fast, and Paul had to skip a few words here and there because it was that fast for him. But I thought it was really good. I think the soloing was really, really well done. The energy was great. Eric Carr was just, you know, the man can play at any tempo. He's fantastic. So I thought that he did a really great, great job with these two songs particularly. And I think that connection, how they had it on here, where they had Under the Gun into Bruce's solo and then into Tears Are Falling, I thought that was a good trio there. I thought that that's where I was kind of like finding that I was really enjoying it when I was in, at this part of the show.
But real fast, Mark, what do you say about Bruce Kulick's soloing on this album? Isn't it close to perfect?
Yeah, I think it's. I think he did a brilliant job.
Yeah,
and I think it's why that was a good idea that they picked this. I mean, I think he's always been one of the more solid members of the band that way, where you can always rely on the fact that his solos would be good live. You know, you didn't have to worry about him botching something. He was always very good live. So I think that the solos on this album, fantastic. Even, you know, the classic songs, I think he did a fantastic job of it. And just to address one thing really quickly, I know that Ken was saying that he didn't like how they put Rock and Roll Night more in the middle and didn't view it as an important song. But that's the whole point, I think. At this point, they didn't want to be looked at as like the legacy band. They wanted to be taken seriously as a current band. And if they gave all that focus on Rock and Roll Night, they would be looking at, they would be making it like they were more of a classic band and not a current band.
Yes, a real quick thing about Fist Like a Glove. You can actually hear Bruce Kulick's backing vocals on that one. They are not. They are not as good as his soloing.
Yeah, of course. But he's never been a singer to be.
He's there and he's adding to the sound or trying to. So, you know, Bruce hit the ground from day one. He was dialed in. That's why he got the gig, because he was reliable. He did it right every show. You know?
Exactly.
So, all right, I'm going to roll. I want to get into the Bruce versus Mark part of this. I'm going to roll these last two questions for the Off the Soundboard just into one shot to go around. And this is going to be your stage banter, best and worst, if applicable. And the same applies to the solos, best solo and the solo that should have been edited out. Lonnie, let's start with you.
The best solo, I think, is I'm going to go with that it's Bruce's. I really enjoy Bruce's solo. I mean, Eric Carr's drum solo is really good, too. Don't get me wrong. But I think Bruce is just really on fire and throughout this entire show. So I'm going with Bruce's guitar solo. It was fun. Just a little bit more fun than the drum solo. I like Eric Carr's drumming, but drum solos just aren't the greatest thing for me anyway. But which solo could be edited out? I'm going to go with the Gene. It's just a bunch of kind of just nonsense almost. It seems like it's like, what am I? I mean, again, if you're watching it, it might be different. But just listening to the Gene solo is like, what am I even listening to? This is like skip to the next song almost immediately. The best stage banter, I know it's as cheesy as it gets, but I'm gonna go with the Paul Love Gun thing. You know, I mean, I'm gonna go with it. It's fun and it's very 80s, and it's total Paul Stanley and Kiss and just glam rock in the 80s. It represents the time perfectly. Worst stage banter, I'm gonna go with Gene Cohen, Eric Carr on the drums. You forgot what instrument you play. The pause and think about it for half a second. So, those are my picks.
All right, Mark, back to you. Best or worst stage rap, or best and or worst solo?
So the best guitar solo, I have to agree with Lonnie, is Bruce's. I think that he did a great job with that. The worst one, I mean, while I didn't like Gene's, I still have to say that Paul's one was just absolutely pointless. You have Bruce Kulick in the band now. Why would you possibly have to still do a solo from Paul? I understand the tour before, because he wasn't a full member yet, so Paul kind of took that spot. But now he's in, he's a full member. Why in God's name would you still have to do Paul with a solo part? Get that out of there. Okay, best stage rap? I have to agree with Lonnie. I think a Love Gun, as much as it's cheesy, And you know, absolutely over the top in some aspects, I think that that's what that era was all about. I mean, it wasn't just Paul doing these kind of raps. Lots of other bands are doing these kind of, you know, style of introducing songs, you know, like that. So I don't think that he's doing something that was totally groundbreaking, but it was totally something that we weren't used to, I guess, as old school Kiss fans because he never really introduced songs like that before. And the worst one, I think, still the one that bothers me, and luckily was saved till the end, was the Lick It Up one. That whole, you know, no, don't lick it down, lick it up. I was like, oh,
and then
you made the audience do it as well. I mean, that's the thing that was really cheesy. Like, why, bad enough that you're saying it, why are you making them do it as well? I mean, but I think that's the worst one.
All right, Ken, what's your take on both of those? Best solo or worst solo? Best rap, worst rap?
Best solo. I'll go with Bruce for the best solo on there. That was really good, of course. Worst solo, I guess you could say Gene. It might as well.
Wow.
Gene and Paul.
Worse than anything.
They're what both. The I mean, really, it's like, I want to say a tie between Gene and Paul, but.
There you go. Daniel's going to lose it.
You know how that is.
It's a tie. So,
but anyway, yeah, that was, it's kind of a waste of time on both of those, actually. What's the other thing? What's the other question?
Stage rep.
The stage reps. Stage rep. Yeah. Yeah. The, you know what? I don't like, I think it was ridiculous. All night to try to, this is the worst time to try to get the worst song to try to get the, audience involved.
Yeah.
With the thing. It just didn't. Yeah. It just didn't work. It's just
no.
No, it didn't work when I was there at concert, from what I remember. And people, you know, half the people, you couldn't hear them or whatever, I guess. But yeah, it wasn't the right song to pick for something like that to get involved. You know, War Machine is a better one to, or not War Machine, but you know, like I Love It Loud, that sort of thing. But
yeah.
The other one was the best rap, or no, that was the worst rap. The best rap, I don't know. There's not really, I guess the Love Gun one. I mean, because it was cheesy at the time. It was, at the time, it seemed cool when you're young and all that stuff. Nowadays, I think it's kind of ridiculous, but back then it worked at the time.
Yeah, Paul's solos, Wade, have always been somewhat limited to a certain extent. But Paul soloing, his little solo sections in concert, did eventually lead to a song. It's his 1980 solo bit that gives birth to Keep Me Coming. Now go back and listen to some of those shows. Mark, you had something to add?
I was just going to ask you something really quickly. I mean, I don't know if you must, I know you must own several different, you know, live shows from the time, but one thing I found really odd, it's not a major thing, but you know, the introduction to the show, it sounded like it got cut off. They're like, you know, Lotus Band Land, it sounded like they cut off Kiss at the end. Was that just an error on the guy's part there, or was that something that was, you know, done in post-production? I always wonder why that was cut off like that. It's not a big thing, but I just thought it was really odd right off the top. There was something.
No one's going to be able to answer that, because I think this show was new to all collectors, even those of us who, you know, have stuff on the side that we don't talk about. So this was new to me, and I think that's what's great about shows is imperfections. Yeah. It gives them a fingerprint, and that, you know, they're not like the end of the road. All right, Daniel. Best or worst stage rap, best or worst solo?
Well, I have to piggyback off of Ken, actually, because I think it's a tie as well. You know, you don't need Gene and Paul solos. So Ken was absolutely right. Erase those and add King of the Mountain instead. I think at least Paul is great with the audience, and that leads me to the worst stage rap. That is when Gene Simmons tried to be the main man on stage. Oh, you motherfuckers, is it loud enough? He stopped. What the hell? And then just that part when he goes nuts. It's so awful. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of that time back in 74, 75, when he went up to the microphone and said, oh, how many people are out there? 100? And then he didn't say anything more.
Cleveland.
Yeah, Cleveland. He hadn't learned anything in a decade. So he was the worst, as you know the ringleader on stage. He didn't work at all. So that's my worst, the worst rap. The best rap on stage is actually, to me, it's the classic one, the Cold Gin intro. You can't top that one. Southern Comfort and, what's the other, vodka tequila, or whatever. Tequila. I mean, it's so great. I still remember the last time I saw Kiss in Dalhalla a few years back when he did that one. It was so awesome when he started that, the same thing. It worked so well and everyone knew what to scream. And the point you made about All Night, Ken, I have to agree with that one as well. It's so terrible. You didn't know when to say It was so hard to follow. Okay, it was there. They could have, counted it in or something, did it otherwise.
That's why it didn't work, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't work at all. And they skipped it a few shows later on, I think. They stopped doing that, if I remember correctly. So that's my take on it.
Awesome. All right. I think worst for me is I'm going to go with the All Night audience participation bit. I just can't imagine being in an audience looking around at other males while we all go, it's a little, it's
but
so
you,
far
Julian,
past.
Real quick, the sound is also, it's hard to make a loud sound. The sound is totally wrong.
I mean, it's like a Taco Bell song. You know, that the only time you get to do that is when you're sitting after a Taco Bell. Okay. I don't think there is a best rap, but I wouldn't get rid of any of these raps because they just all make the show and they really sum up the time and it's got to encapsulate it. Best solo, by far Eric Carr, hearing the synth drums, and he's got issues with the synths, pardon me. Simmons pads. You know, he's got an issue with one of them, but I just love that solo mid-80s because it just continues to grow. I don't have any problem with Gene's because Eric wrote it. That's basically Eric's riff that Gene then took. I think Paul's in this era is, he could easily have not done one and saved it for, as Wade pointed out, Black Diamond.
Another song.
To just keep it in the Zeppelin vein, going into Black Diamond, so that's perfectly fine. So that brings us to the end of Off the Soundboard. You guys ready to listen to some music?
Yeah, yes. One thing I want to say about, I noticed Off the Soundboard, how Detroit Rock City started the show, and then the second song was Fits Like a Glove. Fits Like a Glove became the new Deuce. Because usually you'd have Deuce following it. Mm-hmm. So Fits Like a Glove at that time was the new Deuce. That's the was the replacement for that.
That in it my ain't opinion. No Deuce. It's no Deuce.
I know.
Pretty close.
You would rather have Deuce for
80% of this panel has given us some love today to Fits Like a Glove. So Daniel's going to take it. All right.
Oh, hey, you're still here watching or listening. Why don't you hit that subscribe button or click the like one? And if you want even more, click on the join button on YouTube. Thanks for your support.
All right, before we get into the music section for this.
Have you guys been able to join the channel? Ken and
join the channel.
Mark and Lonnie.
I'm not joining.
Well, if you're interested, do check it out. I just had an idea while we were talking about that. What would make a very neat product would be an Off the Soundboard singles box. They did have singles for quite a few of the other releases. They didn't do one for this, and it would be great if you just pressed up a single for each one of these, slap the artwork back on the front, and put them in a nice little box for sale. There you go. Mm. Free ideas. No charge. Bruce versus Vinny. Let's see what this panel thinks of the guitar solos of multiple songs interpreted by Bruce Kulick versus Vinnie Vincent. And I've sourced all of these from the Lick It Up tour.
Yeah.
So you're going to see an A and a B pop up. But you're going to say which one you prefer, and we're going to see who wins. Let's kick it off with Detroit Rock City. Let's go live this.
We'll be right back.
That, yeah. That is some breakneck speed. Lonnie, A or B?
It's close. They're both good in their own way, but I'm going to go with A. I'm going to go with Bruce. I think his is just a... Just a
How did you know that was Bruce?
He's a Kiss fan.
Because I had the letter beside him, and I guess he assumed that that's...
That may not necessarily be applicable, Mark.
But I'm still going to go with A, though. I'm still going with A. I thought A was just a hair better.
Daniel.
Well, I think that this is a solo that's pretty hard to, you know, pick a winner because it's there's no way of them to show their personality in their solo. I think there are
You can.
Well, at least I don't think anyone did in this solo. It sounds pretty, you know, like the original. So I would have to go with a tie.
Oh, come on.
No, there's no tie.
Okay, I pick number A then.
God, man.
Yeah, wait, there are no... The pictures don't correlate with the solo. That's the whole point. Ken, A or B?
Yeah, I want to say a tie also. Part of the solo is also Paul is in that too.
Yeah,
the second doesn't matter. Second, A or B? Come on.
Okay, I'm gonna go with B.
Okay, Mark.
See, and this is what I was saying about you can't put personality. The A had a little bit more feel to it. I could there was more of a vibrato to it. Mm-hmm. There was a bit more, you know, to it. And B was very like very, very robotic. More like da 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 da. It was very precise to it compared to A. So I kind of liked A better, to be honest.
Yeah, I was A better. In this case, A was Bruce, and B was Vinny. And for anyone who cares about details. The B sample was taken from Denver. All right,
well,
moving on.
We've done this before, and the thing is, Bruce always win in the end.
Well, again, it's not about winning, so.
Yes, it is.
Okay, it's about winning. Cold gin. Clearly, that wasn't cold gin, but there you go.
Yeah, I was like, what?
Yeah. A or B, Ken?
Well,
B.
All right. Daniel.
First of all, I need a copy of the B show. That sounds great, but I have to go B.
It sounds good.
That's Nashville 84, by the way.
Okay.
Which just gave it away as to which it is which.
But, give it away.
Mark.
Well, since it's already given away, B. I mean, you can definitely tell that first one was Vinny. Yeah. B is definitely Bruce Kulick.
Yeah. Lonnie.
I am B as well. A was just all over the place.
Classic Whitney.
All right. Classic. So
very low in the mix, though.
You could tell which one was Vinny on that one because A was all over the place.
Solo needs to be higher in the mix.
The whammy bar.
Bruce, you know, Bruce wins again for precision, but for me, I like the feel. I like the Vinny. In A, which again was Nashville, much more because it's Vinny. That's his solo. He, you know, and he's doing it his way.
Yeah.
I just like that unhinged element to it. Yeah. All right, this one is cold gin. So here we go.
So great.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I'm getting a feeling that one's a bit obvious as well. So, Daniel, A or B?
Well, first of all, I have to say, this is why you love Kiss. Such, you feel the magic in the solos. But I have to go with B. I think that was a great solo.
All right, Lottie.
I'm going A. It's all over the place and crazy. It's a little more fun because it is so out there. So I'm going A.
Lonnie, who do you think that guitarist is?
I think it's pretty obvious which one's which on that one.
Yeah.
Ken.
I'm going with B.
Oh, 2-1. Mark?
I'm going with B.
Yeah. Oh, you guys were no fun.
Oh.
Yeah. You guys going A.
No, I'm not. I'm going with B. You know, that A was everything that was wrong with how Vinny sometimes interprets.
Not according to Lonnie.
It's
still fun, but you know,
yeah.
I watch NASCAR car crashes as well. So that was a NASCAR car.
Have you done
crash.
That? Are you going to use
NASCAR
War Machine? Are you doing War Machine?
Yeah, we'll get there.
Okay.
Ooh.
Patience.
That's a great
patience.
Yeah, we'll get there. All right, so that recording from Vinny was from Toronto, for anyone who cares or is keeping track of that.
Yeah, we care.
All right, so next is a Bruce versus the Studio for All Night. So let's see whether Bruce's live interpretation beats the studio interpretation on All Night. A or B, Mark? Let's start with you.
You know, the thing is, it's kind of like an apple and orange, in my opinion, a little bit, because the studio have so much more opportunity to fix things and to make it sound perfect. And the solo, you just have one shot at it, and, you know, what comes out. I liked A. I thought the live solo was really well done. It had a little bit of extra feel to it. It wasn't so sterile overall in the sound of it either, right? I mean, I love Bruce live. I think he's a fantastic soloist. A.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. A all the way. It just doing that live is, it's not a difficult solo, but it's so beautifully phrased and executed, and he really invests himself in that. So, Ken.
It's close, but I'm going to go with A. I know A is
it's a tie?
Faster tempo. A.
All right, Lonnie.
A as well. It's a really good live. It sounds great.
No. Most people on the board say, or in the chat say, B.
Right.
Funny.
Those guys are right because B is the superior solo.
Oh,
I think. But I think it has to do with me listening to that album thousands of times. Mm-hmm. That's my, that's my solo. I love that solo. And I think some of the effects on the studio version, of course, get lost on the live version, even though I like them both. But I have to give a shout out to the studio version. It's great.
Yeah, I still see this song when it plays. I see the video in my head whenever I hear this song. So, all right, here is War Machine. I love it. We'll be right back. be the sounds of death and war and suffering. That is a War Machine solo. That is how it should be. Lonnie.
B as well. B is great. I loved it.
Yes. I get the feeling Daniel doesn't agree. Daniel?
Fy fan vad bra. I said it in Swedish. That means, goddamn, that's good. And that's B. Such a great solo.
Oh, you like that as well?
Vinnie Vincent all the way.
God damn right. Ken.
It's so obvious which one's who's who.
Yeah, it is.
It's kind of awesome. I'm going to go with A on this one, believe it or not.
But not Mark.
So, you said A.
You said A.
Okay. Mark?
Mark?
I'm going with A as well. I'm a Bruce guy. I find Vinny's sense of non-melodical playing in this is a little irking in me. When he does those sort of chromatic things where he just hits any fret that's under his finger instead of what's theoretically supposed to be played, sort of off-putting a little bit for me. So, and he relies a little too much on that bar, in my opinion. But
no, he's playing the solo from, you know, below his waist. Bruce is playing from the brain.
Yeah, well, but you have a brain for a reason, right? Like the
Yeah, but sometimes you need to use the other one as well.
Oh, yeah, but look at the attack in Vinny's solo there. Bruce was doing the same come revenge. I mean, he was really digging into those strings, but he just didn't have the processing up there going on like Vinny does. Great solos, both of them.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Both are great, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, next, we're moving on to I Still Love You. Mark, let's start with you for this one.
It's a tough one.
I liked A. I thought A was really, really well done.
Ken?
I'm going to go with A. Barely.
Lonnie?
I'm going B. I'm going B. I thought B was more fun.
Daniel?
I see what Lon is saying. B is a bit off the, you know, off the charts, but I think for a song like this, I like Bruce's playing more. You know, it's more, you know, not so crazy. So I'm going A.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I just really like Vinny's solo there, but Bruce is better. But Vinny just has a je ne sais quoi. It's just something about it. It's just discordant in places. All right, yeah. So Bruce wins, but I put my vote in for Vinny on that one. All right, here's another one, Bruce versus the Studio. I believe it's Bruce who does the solo in the studio on this one. Tears Are Falling. We'll be right back. Wow. What a great solo that is. It's just so tasty, perfectly phrased. It's not excessive. I got to start with Mark again for this as the guitarist here.
Well, I honestly, I mean, I've always loved the album, as you know. So the one thing that's always missing to me when I hear it live is that harmonized second guitar that's in there. That's on the studio version, right? But I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, the live versions are absolutely brilliant of it. I always would have loved to have heard what it would have been like if Paul did the accompanying second line in there, the harmonized part in the lead. But they would be missing too much not having that other rhythm guitar underneath there if Paul did that. But I'm going to go with the studio. I've grown up with that version of it. And much like Daniel, I've listened to this album thousands of times through my life, so I'm so used to it that way.
Yeah, Daniel.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with Mark. The live version is awesome, of course, but you can never touch the studio version. When I listen through the headphones like this, it almost makes me cry because it's so great. It's probably one of my top five solos of all time, and I completely love it and the way it sounds on the album, so I have to go with the studio version.
Nice. Ken, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with a studio version. You're so used to hearing it that way. It's going to be exact what you remember. So, yeah, the B was a great, great, you know, performance live.
Yeah, this is one that could be another tie, isn't it, really?
To be perfectly fair. Could, but we can't say that, so.
No, we have to pick sides here. For me, it's the studio one for the same reasons all you guys have said. It's so imprinted on my brain. It is such a perfect song.
Wade Lucas, overrated? Question mark. No, it's not.
No, it may be for Wade. That's the great. No, that's the great thing about Kiss fans.
I think you should play on the Chuck because Chuck says that Vinnie Vincent is the most overrated Kiss guitar player in Kiss.
Ah, well, okay. Again, there's no that's right or wrong answers thing. When it
except
comes
for
to
songwriting.
I thought he meant the soul on Tears Are Falling. I got all riled up.
All right, Lonnie, last word on Tears Are Falling, studio or
live? I agree with the studio. The studio is so, so damn good. The live is good, is great, don't get me wrong, but that studio version of it is it's epic almost. It's just fantastic.
Mm. All right, we're into the tail end of the show here. I love it. There's not a lot in the solo, and I love it loud, as I well know from being able to play that damn thing. I'm B. I just like the little edge of whammy, adding a little bit of seasoning to it rather than just the vibrato. It just adds in an element. Ken?
Yeah, I'll go with B also. No comments Daniel. Otherwise.
I think I like the B one a bit more because of... How do you say it? Like the dive bomb at the end. It's a bit better than in the A version. So,
yeah, Lonnie,
B. He just a little bit of flair added to it, just for a basic solo. Just kind of, you know, give it a little touch.
Yeah, considering there's not much to it, throwing the kitchen sink in with dives, whammy, and a little bit more than just vibrato, Mark.
Yeah, I'll have to agree. I mean, I think that in such a simple solo, adding a little bit extra to it like that, you know, the dive bar, you know, all that stuff in there, it just took something so simple and just gave it a little extra.
Yeah, nice. That one was from Toronto, and War Machine and I Still Love You were both from Denver for the Vinny side of things. Mm. All right, let's move on to Love Gun. What the hell is Eric Carr doing?
Drink those pads.
It sounds good, Lara. I think that's
the water drums. Mark, A or B on there?
I mean, it's a pretty, again, obvious who's doing what, but I do think that both of them are a little off the hinge in its own way. But I got to still go with Bruce. I think B is the better one. I mean, it's more, I can recognize it a bit more with the way he played it. I mean, sometimes you don't even know what's going on when Vinny's playing that solo. It's just, it's just out to lunch, you know?
Yeah, Ken.
I'm going to go with A. Like, you need to be unhinged in concert sometimes. So.
Wow.
Excuse me. I'm going with A.
The voice of reason has spoken. Oh,
I did not see that one coming. Lonnie.
I'm going with A, too. It's so out the lunch. It's great. So I'm going A as well.
All right, Daniel.
Well, actually, I'm going with A as well, because
it's
kind of reminiscent of that solo he did in Rio in 83 on Calling Dr. Love. I don't know if he, you know, stretches the neck of the guitar. I like that sound when, you know, I think he's stretching the neck of the guitar in order to get that sound. It's kind of reminiscent of that great solo from Calling Dr. Love in 83 in Rio, and such a great solo here as well, even though Bruce does a fine job as well, but I have to go with Vinny on this one.
Jesus, he's strangling the bloody cat on that one. I'm B. I mean, that A one is so far out there. It's got his Jendel for
its
zip
awesome.
Code.
Awesome.
It's too far out there for me. Yeah, well, it's fun as shit. Come on, don't get me wrong. That one's also Denver. All right, so we're moving back into the last two. We have Rock and Roll All Night and Party Every Day. I do apologize. Some of these got a little loud, but there we are.
We don't mind loud. If it's too loud, you're too old, mother truckers.
All right. So, Daniel, your lips are already flapping. A or B?
Yeah, sorry about that. But I have to go with A. Such a cool solo. I'm going with the A.
Oh, Mark.
B. I'm going to go with B this time.
All right. Lonnie.
I'm going A as well with Daniel.
Yeah.
Oh, this is all over the map. Ken.
I'm going with B. I miss Ace's solo.
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's, so we got a tie. I'm going to be breaking the tie here, and I'm going with A.
Ooh.
Sorry, Bruce. Yeah, love you, Bruce. But what I like about A is it's just got a little bit more of that Chuck Berry rock and roll feel to it, which is really weird coming out of Vinny.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He's just going pure Barry with some of the parts and that and the phrasing. There's nothing wrong with Bruce's. Give me either. Give me both. Give me all. Yeah. Give me more. All right. Let's go into, let's see what the audience said before we do the last one.
Yes, Vinny was A.
Yeah, A was Vinny.
A lot of A's.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
A was Vinny, and that was from Toronto 84 as well.
Pretty funny. A, B chose A and B.
All right, here we go.
Of course.
Last one. Lick It Down.
We'll be right back.
audience is throwing lots of they're all Canadians. Mark.
I'm going with B. I mean, even though it starts off kind of simplistic, I think that he actually started doing some really, really cool licks there at the end of on B there. I mean, the problem is I just find that sometimes Vinny's hand or how he has his whammy bar set up, every time he kind of touches it, it goes like a little out of tune all the time. You can always hear his notes are a little flat sometimes when he plays on there. So as a guitar player, that really bugs me, the tuning issue of it. So I'm going to go with B.
Okay, Cap.
I'm going with A. I think it was much better solo, in my opinion. I just enjoyed it more than that B.
Yeah, I agree with Ken completely. A. Mm-hmm. Lonnie.
I agree. A.
Daniel.
Well, I think that version was one of the best solo versions to lick it up I've ever heard, I think. And the one I'm picking is A. It's awesome.
So Bruce Kulick does Vinny better than Vinny on this case. So no, you know what? Overall, I think Bruce has won this battle. It is so close. Mm. There were a lot of us going, you know, that's a tie. Yeah, I like both of those for what each one is. That's the great thing about Kiss is that you can listen to these shows. You can go that one, by the way, was from Nashville. You go listen to those soundboards from the Lick It Up tour. And there's some great performances there with Vinny as well. You now have a couple of soundboards from the Asylum tour. You've got a few from the Animalized tour. So there are so many different ways to listen to this band. And then, of course, to listen to the real deal, go back to the originals for a lot of the classic catalog to hear how they were meant to be played. So,
but Julian, before you end and start to go towards the end here, I have to say, I really appreciate this. You providing us with these sound bites. It was awesome. It's so fun to hear these solos and comparing them. So this is something we need to do all over again pretty soon. It was awesome.
It was fun. It was fun to put these together. We did this with Mark St. John and the Poughkeepsie one. You know, we're going to have to do it again in the future as well, because we have not put Tommy under the microscope for solos, and he's done just about everything in the catalog any of these other guys have done. So it'll be great to do an expanded one on that. Obviously, combining this around the conversation of Off the Soundboard is just a perfect opportunity. I want to thank everyone who's joined us today and voted, and you know, gotten to listen to some music. The copyright dings will be ding-dinging away on this episode, but I don't care anymore because we've demonetized these videos, so it doesn't matter a damn. All the publishing goes where it's supposed to. It's been a super fun episode. Who knows what we're going to talk about next week, but one thing I do guarantee is that we will be back next week. But that is it for now. Go listen to Off the Soundboard. If you're ordering it, order it. If you don't want it, go get the digital. $11 on Amazon in the US. You really can't go wrong with that price point for an album, especially if you have a coupon. So that's it for now. Thanks for all the comments and participation. And from Lonnie, from Daniel, Ken, Mark, and myself, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for spending time listening to the KISS FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the message board and discuss the topics we've broadcast today. Don't forget to hit subscribe wherever you've listened to this show, and a like would very much be appreciated. We hope you'll join us again, but until then, remember, life's a radio. Turn it up to 10.